Chapter 15. Possessed a latent warmth of feeling, and a capacity for sympathy which were concealed by a sort of haughty, arbitrary indifference of manner arising from his early training, and by a something an enemy might have called foppish, in his aspect like a distorted echo of past elegance. He managed to keep an almost military discipline amongst the coolies of the estate he had dragged into the light of day out of the tangle and shadows of the jungle, and the white shirt he put on every evening with its stiff glossy front and high collar looked as if he had meant to preserve the decent ceremony of evening dress, but had wound a thick crimson sash above his hips as a concession to the wilderness, once his adversary, now his vanquished companion. Moreover, it was a hygienic precaution. Worn wide open in front, a short jacket of some merry silken stuff floated from his shoulders. His fluffy, fair hair, thin at the top, curled slightly at the sides, a carefully arranged mustache, an ungarnished forehead, the gleam of low patent shoes peeping under the wide bottom of trousers cut straight from the same stuff as the gossamer coat, completed a figure recalling, with its sash, a pirate chief of romance, and at the same time the elegance of a slightly bald dandy indulging, in seclusion, a taste for unorthodox costume. It was his evening get-up. The proper time for the Sofala to arrive at Batu Beru was an hour before sunset, and he looked picturesque, and somehow quite correct too, walking at the water's edge on the background of grass slope crowned with a low long bungalow with an immensely steep roof of palm thatch, and clad to the eaves in flowering creepers. While the Sofala was being made fast, he strolled in the shade of the few trees left near the landing place, waiting till he could go on board. Her white men were not of his kind. The old Sultan, though his wistful invasions were a nuisance, was really much more acceptable to his fastidious taste. But still they were white. The periodical visits of the ship made a break in the well-filled sameness of the days without disturbing his privacy. Moreover, they were necessary from a business point of view, and through a strain of preciseness in his nature he was irritated when she failed to appear at the appointed time. The cause of the irregularity was too absurd, and Massey, in his opinion, was a contemptible idiot. The first time the Sofala reappeared under the new agreement swinging out of the bend below, after he had almost given up all hope of ever seeing her again, he felt so angry that he did not go down at once to the landing place. His servants had come running to him with the news, and he had dragged a chair close against the front rail of the veranda, spread his elbows out, rested his chin on his hands, and went on glaring at her fixedly while she was being made fast opposite his house. He could make out easily all the white faces on board. Who on earth was that kind of patriarch they had got there on the bridge now? At last he sprang up and walked down the gravel path. It was a fact that the very gravel for his paths had been imported by the Sofala. Exasperated out of his quiet superciliousness, without looking at anyone right or left, he accosted Massey straightway in so determined a manner that the engineer, taken aback, began to stammer unintelligibly. Nothing could be heard but the words, "Mr. Van Wyck." Dot dot indeed, Mr. Van Wyck. Dot dot for the future, Mr. Van Wyck, and by the suffusion of blood Massey's vast bilious face acquired an unnatural orange tint, out of which the disconcerted coal black eyes shone in an extraordinary manner. Nonsense. I am tired of this. I wonder you have the impudence to come alongside my jetty, as if I had it made for your convenience alone. Massey tried to protest earnestly. Mr. Van Wyck was very angry. He had a good mind to ask that German firm those people in Malacca what was their name? Boats with green funnels. They would be only too glad of the opening to put one of their small steamers on the run. Yes, Schnitzler, Jacob Schnitzler, would in a moment. Yes. He had decided to write without delay. In his agitation Massey caught up his falling pipe. You don't mean it, sir, he shrieked. You shouldn't mismanage your business in this ridiculous manner. Mr. Van Wyck turned on his heel. The other three whites on the bridge had not stirred during the scene. Massey walked hastily from side to side, puffed out his cheeks, suffocated. Stuck up Dutchman. And he moaned out feverishly a long tale of griefs. The efforts he had made for all these years to please that man. This was the return you got for it, eh? Pretty. Right to Schnitzler let in the green funnel boats get an old Hamburg Jew to ruin him. No, really he could laugh. Dot 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 he laughed sobbingly. Dot 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 ah, ah, ah. And make him carry the letter in his own ship, presumably. He stumbled across a grating and swore. He would not hesitate to fling the Dutchman's correspondence overboard, the whole confounded bundle. He had never, never made any charge for that accommodation. But Captain Wally, his new partner, would not let him, probably. Besides, it would be only putting off the evil day. For his own party would make a hole in the water, rather than look on tamely at the green funnels overrunning his trade. He raved aloud. The China boys hung back with the dishes at the foot of the ladder. He yelled from the bridge down at the deck, "Aren't we going to have any chow this evening at all?" Then turned violently to Captain Wally, who waited, grave and patient, at the head of the table, smoothing his beard in silence now, and then with a forbearing gesture. "You don't seem to care what happens to me. Don't you see that this affects your interests as much as mine? It's no joking matter." He took the foot of the table, growling between his teeth. "Unless you have a few thousands put away somewhere." "I haven't." Mr. Van Wyck dined in his thoroughly lit up bungalow, putting a point of splendor in the night of his clearing above the dark bank of the river. Afterwards he sat down to his piano, and in a pause he became aware of slow footsteps passing on the path along the front. A plank or two creaked under a heavy tread. He swung half round on the music stool, listening with his fingertips at rest on the keyboard. His little terrier barked violently, backing in from the veranda. A deep voice apologized gravely for his intrusion. He walked out quickly. At the head of the steps, the patriarchal figure, who was the new captain of the Cephala, apparently he had seen a round dozen of them, but not one of that sort, towered without advancing. The little dog barked unceasingly, till a flick of Mr. Van Wyck's handkerchief made him spring aside into silence. Captain Wally, opening the matter, was met by a punctiliously polite but determined opposition. They carried on their discussion standing, where they had come face to face. Mr. Van Wyck observed his visitor with attention. "Then at last, as if forced out of his reserve, I am surprised that you should intercede for such a confounded fool." This outbreak was almost complimentary, as if its meaning had been that such a man as you should intercede. Captain Wally let it pass by without flinching. One would have thought he had heard nothing. He simply went on to state that he was personally interested in putting things straight between them. Personally. Dot dot, but Mr. Van Wyck, really carried away by his disgust with Massey, became very incisive. "Indeed, if I am to be frank with you, his whole character does not seem to me particularly estimable or trustworthy." Dot, Captain Wally, always straight, seemed to grow an inch taller and broader, as if the girth of his chest had suddenly expanded under his beard. "My dear sir, you don't think I came here to discuss a man with whom I am closely associated." A sort of solemn silence lasted for a moment. He was not used to asking favors, but the importance he attached to this affair had made him willing to try. Dot 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 Mr. Van Wyck, favorably impressed, and suddenly more lively'd by a desire to laugh, interrupted, "That's all right if you make it a personal matter, but you can do no less than sit down and smoke a cigar with me." A slight pause, then Captain Wally stepped forward heavily. As to the regularity of the service, for the future he made himself responsible for it. And his name was Wally, perhaps to a sailor he was speaking to a sailor, was he not? Not altogether unfamiliar. There was a lighthouse now, on an island. Maybe Mr. Van Wyck himself. Dot dot, oh yes, Oh, indeed. Mr. Van Wyck caught on at once. He indicated a chair. How very interesting. For his own part, he had seen some service in the last Achin War, but had never been so far east. Wally Island? Of course. Now that was very interesting. What changes his guest must have seen since. I can look further back even on a whole half century. Captain Wally expanded a bit. The flavor of a good cigar, it was a weakness, had gone straight to his heart, also the civility of that young man. There was something in that accidental contact, of which he had been starved in his years of struggle. The front wall retreating made a square recess furnished like a room. A lamp with a milky glass shade, suspended below the slope of the high roof at the end of a slender brass chain, threw a bright round of light upon a little table bearing an open book and an ivory paper knife. And, in the translucent shadows beyond, other tables could be seen, a number of easy chairs of various shapes, with a great profusion of skin rugs strewn on the teakwood planking all over the veranda. The flowering creepers scented the air. Their foliage clipped out between the uprights made, as if several frames of thick unstirring leaves reflecting the lamplight in a green glow. Through the opening at his elbow, Captain Wally could see the gangway lantern of the Cephala burning dim by the shore, the shadowy masses of the town beyond the open lustrous darkness of the river, and, as if hung along the straight edge of the projecting eaves, a narrow black strip of the night sky full of stars resplendent. The famous cigar in hand, he had a moment of complacency. A trifle. Somebody must lead the way. I just showed that the thing could be done, but you men brought up to the use of steam cannot conceive the vast importance of my bit of venturesomeness to the eastern trade of the time. Why, that new route reduced the average time of a southern passage by 11 days for more than half the year. 11 days. It's on record. But the remarkable thing, speaking to a sailor I should say, was dot, he talked well, without egotism, professionally. The powerful voice, produced without effort, filled the bungalow even into the empty rooms with a deep and limpid resonance, seemed to make a stillness outside, and Mr. Van Wyck was surprised by the serene quality of its tone, like the perfection of manly gentleness. Nursing one small foot, in a silk sock and a patent leather shoe, on his knee, he was immensely entertained. It was as if nobody could talk like this now, and the overshadowed eyes, the flowing white beard, the big frame, the serenity, the whole temper of the man, were an amazing survival from the prehistoric times of the world coming up to him out of the sea. Captain Wally had been also the pioneer of the early trade in the Gulf of Petchi Lee. He even found occasion to mention that he had buried his dear wife there 26 years ago. Mr. Van Wyck, impassive, could not help speculating in his mind swiftly as to the sort of woman that would mate with such a man. Did they make an adventurous and well-matched pair? No. Very possible, as he had been small, frail, no doubt very feminine, or most likely commonplace with domestic instincts, utterly insignificant. But Captain Wally was no garrulous bore, and shaking his head, as if to dissipate the momentary gloom that had settled on his handsome old face, he alluded conversationally to Mr. Van Wyck's solitude. Mr. Van Wyck affirmed that sometimes he had more company than he wanted. He mentioned smilingly some of the peculiarities of his intercourse with Y. Sultan. He made his visits in force. Those people damaged his grass plot in front. It was not easy to obtain some approach to a lawn in the tropics, and the other day had broken down some rare bushes he had planted over there. And Captain Wally remembered immediately that, in 47, the then Sultan, this man's grandfather, had been notorious as a great protector of the piratical fleets of Pros from farther east. They had a safe refuge in the river at Badu Beru. He financed more especially a Balanani chief called Haji Damon. Captain Wally, nodding significantly his bushy white eyebrows, had very good reason to know something of that. The world had progressed since that time. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.